Chazal say, Poschim b'chvod achsanya. It's supposed to begin by giving honor to those who host you. So we'll start with the fact that we owe a tremendous hakar satov to President Joel and Yeshiva University for hosting Yeshiva Torah Chagah here on the wonderful campus of Yeshiva University in Israel. But our relationship, it goes much deeper than just renters and landlords. That's what Moshe Kranzer tells me, the director of admissions, that after one more yeshiva, the yeshiva that has the most presence on Yeshiva University campus is Yeshiva Torah Chagah. It's probably due to the fact that almost all of your rabbeim studied at Yeshiva University or didn't get into Yeshiva University, and obviously the relationship we have here with the YU, Kollel in Israel, it's just a natural transition from here to Yeshiva University. Our relationship even goes deeper than that, because President Joel, in fact, sent his own son here to study in Yeshiva. Nachum is one of our esteemed alumni now studying in NYU.
NYU.
That's right.
It sounded like in NYU.
No. Yeshiva University. We don't send anybody to
NYU. No.
Except... So without any further introduction, please.
Thanks.
President Joel.
I'm sorry that we're late. I wanted to say we couldn't find the place, but that wouldn't work. It's really a delight to be with you. I didn't have the zechus last year to speak to the group, but also I have to start with Hakaras HaTov. The year that my son spent here was a really important year in his life, and it really mattered in terms of both the development of his skills and the strengthening of his hashkafa. And it's something that he recalls and treasures, and therefore I do as well. And I hope that you are all zochet to have as meaningful a time and as full time as he did. So in a certain way, that goes beyond whether or not we are the landlords here. We are partners, because the leadership of the yeshiva is wonderful enough to partner with my wife and me in the raising of our son. Very important. I also apologize for looking like I'm limping around. I have all these jokes. Everybody asks me, you know, why I'm wearing a cane, why I have a cane. So I say, one thing is that you have to teach the lesson that a good leader without a staff is nothing. Or you could say that in my job, everybody always tells me no and is saying no, 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 and I want to say, okay. Okay, you're going to YU? All right. I knew it was a certain intellectual level. What else did I do? It's for pity. People will pity me and I need the pity. Or it's really a flask. It has an open thing. I promise I have to disprove that. It's not a flask. You see, it's one of these things. And I'd also like to say that this was because of a basketball injury, but Rabbi Schneider would know that it's my son and not my oldest son and not me who's the ball player. So I wish it wasn't. Make sure that you take a little time from learning, from the age of like 25 to 45, and play ball, okay? Because then you'll be 59, and between 25 and 45, I was so busy. We had wonderful friends, but it wasn't a chevra that played ball. We would learn, we would do different things. We didn't play ball. And now I'm 59, and I'm dying to be an adolescent, right? I'm dying to play some ball. So I love the fact that I tell people that I hurt myself in a football injury, but I hurt myself walking, doing nothing. Doing nothing. It's the increasing decrepitude en route to 120. And since I'm not half there, the difference is once you get to be like 50, 52, when you have a new pain, instead of saying, how do I get rid of it? I say, hello, new friend. We're going to go a long way together. It's really very nice. It's my pleasure to be with you. Thank you for taking some time. The interesting challenge for me is that you are the 15th school in 4 days. That I have the zechus to address. But Achron Achron Chaviv, this is a special place. I come Just, I guess, a word of biography, or two words of biography. I'm a recovering attorney. I grew up in Yonkers, New York. Went to MTA. Had a sufficiently miserable experience at MTA that wild horses couldn't get me to go to yeshiva college. I went to NYU, where I got I was in a special program. It was called Metropolitan Leadership Program. But NYU used to have a campus literally across the river from YU. So I got to spend lots of time going back. It was much nicer to like YU when I wasn't a student there. And I was very lucky. And I was very lucky because I got a great education. And I stayed. But I'll also tell you that I'm a high school educated Jew. I have several chavrusas in the course of the week. I'm fairly learned. I'm still a high school educated Jew. And which means that for me, right, the text is always a little bit of an obstacle. Instead of, by the time you finish here, and the Mitzvah Hashem at YU, right, the text invites you in. And that's the big difference. It's a big difference that when you're rugged enough in learning, right, that it's not how can I figure out the words, but how do I use the words and then go into the sea of Talmud and it's where I'm swimming and I'm comfortable swimming, is just so important. I can't tell you enough. It's worth that extra effort. It's worth that work to own it. And once you own it, it's yours forever. So one of the few regrets in my life is that I didn't go to YU. But I also was active in youth programming and the like, I went to a YU Shabbaton, and I met my best friend. She unfortunately met me about 6 months later, but we're married 36 years anyway, and I went on to NYU Law School. I was an assistant district attorney fighting crime in the Bronx for 4 years in the mid-1970s when they wrote the book Bonfire of the Vanities. I was Bonfire of the Vanities. And then I became an assistant associate dean and a professor of law at Cardozo. I taught legal ethics to prove I had a sense of humor. And I was part of the YU administration for 8 years. I was going to go, at the same time, I was the youth director of the Young Israel of Oceanside, where I had a tremendous influence on the weakest of the young people. And I took small little young children and helped them grow. Benji, what used to be Benji, was... So, now, you would believe me that I helped him grow until you meet his father, who's also like that. But... which was really a great journey too, and I was doing that while I was associate dean. After that, I was going to join a law firm, and my wife was very unhappy because she said, there are enough good Jewish lawyers and you won't be happy doing that. And I said, no, we have 5 kids, we have 6 now, had to earn a living. And out of the blue, someone called me and asked me if I would consider becoming the head of the Hillel organization. Literally out of the blue. My life never looked to me and say, how am I going to do career development? I mean, it was all a series of mistakes. So, ad hayom hazeh. And asked if I wanted to be the head of Hillel. And I said, Hillel, I said, I wouldn't be caught dead at Hillel when I was in campus. They said, well, that's not necessarily bad. I said, well, you know, I mean, I'm not a rav. They said, well, I've had not success with rabbis. I said, you know, I'm Orthodox. They said, well, maybe a problem. And then I said, where's it based? And I said, Washington. I said, I love Washington, but we live in Oceanside. And I'm not about to disrupt my family. So I said, no, I went home and my wife had a fit and said, you're going for an interview. And I said, what are you talking about? We have a wonderful life. She said, how many people have a chance of 2 wonderful lives? So literally, I went for an interview. I didn't want the job. That's always dangerous, because when you don't want the job, you do well in the interview. And to my horror, they offered me the job, and Esther made me do it. And we moved to Silver Spring, Maryland, and had 15 unbelievably wonderful years. We raised our children there. It was really fabulous. I did much too much traveling. Hillel was a great job. It really, we turned, I helped, but lots of people helped really turn it around in real good ways, primarily for the 90% of the Jews who are not frum, but also for those who don't choose Yeshiva University. There have to be places where they can be relatively safe and can be with something of a chevra. 15 really wonderful years. Silver Spring was a great and healthy place to raise young people like Rabbi Schneider. who was a Ben Bayit and someone who we love very much. See, you live long enough, you seem to know everybody, right? And Hillel was a wonderful place, and I didn't know if I'd keep that job forever, because you shouldn't keep a job forever, but I thought afterwards I could be a consultant or something like that with a fancy title who does nothing. And the only thing I knew for sure, that it was one job in the Jewish world that I would never have, and that was the presidency of Yeshiva University, because I'm not a gaon and I'm not a rav. And so it was really safe for me to say, boy, they're doing this wrong at yeshiva, they're doing that wrong at yeshiva. And then the Rabbanu Shel Olam exercised his macabre sense of humor. And I was drafted, actually, 6.5 years ago. And it's really been a wonderful journey. A wonderful journey. We have 6 children, Kenayin Hara, 3 grandchildren, who are wonderful. And I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up, which is nice, too. I want to tell you, it's interesting, because people always say, you know, you were at Hillel, and now you're at Yeshiva. What about, you know, what do you tell students who say they want to go to Hillel and not to YU? So I said, if they can find a university that's Hillel University, you know, maybe that's okay, but you don't go to Hillel University. You go to X University, and you have a retreat center there called the Hillel. And it's a very different thing, and it's a very different atmosphere. But when I was at Hillel, and people would come to me and say, you know, my kid, I have a question. My kid was accepted at Penn and was accepted at YU. Which one should they go to? I always answered a certain way, and I still answer that way, which is the following. That's the wrong question. The right question is YU a match for my son? If YU is a match for your son, then Harvard doesn't get to compete, and Neges Yisrael doesn't get to compete, because what's offered at Yeshiva is unique, and you can't find it elsewhere. If for some reason Yeshiva is not a match for you, you want grass and trees. We actually have grass and trees now, by the way. The grass is AstroTurf, and the trees cough occasionally. But and we even have a campus now, and we've even closed off streets. That's actually a really good place, and there's a neighborhood now. And we've even connected the Eruvim between our side of Washington Heights and the Breuer side of Washington Heights. So the Eruv that they don't accept is connected to our Eruv. Kol Yisrael Erevim Zeh L'Zeh. That's what it means. But if there's a reason not to go to yeshiva, then there are 15 places where you can be relatively safe. And if you choose to go there, you just have to promise me that you will work with your rabbeim here on writing up a contract just for yourself. Because you're going to be alone one way or another. And there should be certain non-negotiables in your life. And you won't be surrounded by them at any other college. So you have to work on a contract. I will have a chavrusa. I will learn, you know, yeah, I'll go learn. It goes like this, like this, like this. This is who I'm going to be. I'm going to speak to, you know, Aselecha Rav, Aknelecha Chaver. I'll have the right Chaver and I'll have the right Rav. You must do that. And then I have to tell you, and just accept it as my bias, but I've pretty much been around. Right? You probably should be at YU. Because it's also a place to grow and to have an integrated life based on Torah. I'm sure you've been talking about and questioning and challenging the whole notion of Torah Umada. I don't know what Torah Umada is. There are a lot of philosophers, I guess, that have all these arguments about how many Torahs can fit on the head of a Mada pin. And people call it synthesis, and people call it harmony, and people call it... So I'll tell you as I understand it. And you know, each of my predecessors, Dr. Revel and Dr. Belkin, Zichronam Livracha, Libodel Lachayim, Dr. Lamb, had their own approach to what this was, but it was all basically the same thing. From Mitzidi, you should just understand what would you be getting into. It's the following philosophy. The core of our lives is Torah. The core of our lives is Torah. The gift that we have, the responsibility that we have is Torah. And we believe, that through the lens of Torah and Torah values, we should embrace God's other gifts, arts and sciences, knowledge, culture and commerce, poetry and prose, through the lens of Torah and Torah values, and grow in that. And through that, in partnership with Hashem, try to build a life that will advance humanity and will advance civilization, that will be strong for the Jewish people and beyond, because I think that's why we were created. And I think that's what you get when you continue to grow. I think your year or your 2 years of Torah Tshuva are incredibly important. But I don't believe your Abayim view it as if it's an inoculation, like it's an injection that's going to protect you for the future. I think they're giving you a launching pad. And I think they believe, and I believe, that in the ideal way, if you're able to, and if you are, have the competence to do so, this should be a launching pad. And you take off from here, but you need a stage two to your rocket, and you need a fuel to the rocket, and you need a guidance system to go into orbit, and you need to be able to sustain yourself with life support when you're there. And that's why this is part of a continuum. It's not the beginning and the end. And we want to be part of that continuum. So that's the infomercial. Okay, that's my job. I'll put it in another context as we go ahead a little bit. I also, those of you who choose not to go to YU, you'll have wonderful lives. You'll be wonderful B'nai Torah. Be mochel me if anything I say makes it sound like the only place for you is yeshiva. I think the only place for you is yeshiva. But you'll be fine if you're careful in other places. I want you. I mean, I'd like to work for you. So, I think I told this group the story. 3 years ago, I did meet with this group. You probably know this one. About George Bush? You know the George Bush story? Do you know the George Bush story? Okay, I'm not going to tell you that story. I'm going to tell you a set of stories about my friend who's the president of Fordham University, whose name is Father Joseph McShane. Fordham University is a pretty good university in New York. It's one of the largest Catholic universities in the United States. Father McShane is a guy who's a few years older than me. He's been president of Fordham for about 12 years. He's a Jesuit priest, and we've had lots to do with each other. Presidents have lonely jobs, so you bond wherever you can bond. So I bond with Joe McShane, and he also likes kosher food. So every 3 months, we have lunch together at a different kosher restaurant in New York, and he enjoys, you know, the restaurant life. He also thinks that all Jews are Orthodox, and I haven't broken the news to him yet. He also thinks the waiters in the kosher restaurants are Orthodox, so he's had more conversations with Hispanic Orthodox Jews than I know exist. In fact, he has so much fun that he suggested that maybe we can, from time to time, go out for dinner to kosher restaurants. But I told him that I have more family obligations than he does. A little slow, guys. But I invited him for lunch at Yeshiva University at the end of last year. And the end of last year? No, about a year ago. And he came for lunch, and he enjoyed lunch. And then he asked if he could see our Beis Medrash. Serious Catholics are absolutely entranced with Chevrusa learning and Beis Medrash. They haven't figured out how people who are not going to be priests end up being seriously learned Catholics. And they're very taken with the fact that in our world, we expect a Hebraman to be a Ben Torah and to know how to learn. And to them, the Beis Medrash is this majestic hall of learning, I must tell you. Some of you know I have a lot of experience taking cardinals into the Beis Medrash. They seem to like it a lot. So I told Father McShane that we have a policy that you have to be a cardinal in order to get into our Beis Medrash. But I said, maybe, you know, you'll go to our Beis Medrash and it'll lead to a promotion. You never know. So I took him over to what we now call the old Beis Medrash, because we have a wonderful, glorious, additional Beis Medrash. We still use that Beis Medrash. It's now the official Beis Medrash. He went into the Beis Medrash, I explained to him some things. He came out. He was tremendously moved. And, you know, the Beis Medrash is in the building where Yeshiva University High School, where MTA is. And as we're walking out of the building, there's a bench in front of the building, and I look at these four, like 13 or 14-year-old guys, who I assumed were freshmen at MTA, who were sitting on a bench looking miserable. So I walked over to them with Father McShane, and I said, "Hi, I'm Richard Joel. I work for you. Is everything okay?" I go, "You guys freshmen at MTA?" They said, "Yeah." I said, "Everything okay?" Well, first of all, everything's not okay because I'm talking to them, right? But they say, "No, we missed our bus." I said, "Well, where are you from?" They said, "Well, Hollowood, Jamaica Estates, Hillcrest. That's the route." I said, "Well, can I help you?" They said, "No, one of our teachers is making arrangements." I said, "Okay." I thought, "Okay. Well, as long as I have you here," I said, "I'd like to introduce you to my friend, Father McShane, who's the president of Fordham University." They go, you know, they're like, I said, say hello. They said, hello. He looks at them, he goes, shalom! And they're saying, why didn't I go to Hafter? Right? So then he says, do you speak Hebrew? And they say, the Inquisition. Why am I in the Inquisition? I said, answer Father McShay. And I said, yes. He goes, biblical or modern? I said, gee, we have to go. And they started to bench Gomel, right? And I said, we have to go, say goodbye. I said, come, Father. And we walked down the street for about 15 feet. And then he stops. And he says, Richard, he says, I forgot something very important. I have to go back. I said, fine. So he goes back. The boys thought they had escaped, right? But there they are. And he goes back, and he looks at me, and he says, boys, he said, I forgot something. I have something very important to tell you. You have to listen to me. He says, you must keep the covenant alive. You must keep the covenant alive. And don't miss the bus again. And walked away. And I was very moved, because sometimes we forget, and sometimes it takes the other to remind us that ultimately, the zechus and the chiyuv that we have is keep the covenant alive, is that we made a deal with Rabbanu Shalom, or the Rabbanu Shalom made a deal with us, right? That he would give us this Torah. Thank you very much. That's very shkayach. Shkayach. Which one has the nickel under it? It's a full tuition scholarship. Rabbanu Shalom gave us this Torah, and here was the deal as I understand it. If you take my Torah, if you walk in my ways, if you keep my mitzvahs, if you learn Torah and you love Torah and you live Torah, then what's the deal? You get to be a nation of priests and a holy people. And through you the world will be blessed. That the deal, the covenantal relationship is God gives us the Torah, we study it and live it, and we get to be our lagoyim. That's what we are. And sometimes we just make it very complicated. And the real question is, what do we do? What do we do to be successful in that? Now, you're a real sophisticated group. You really are, by the way. We love having students from Torah Shraga at Yeshiva, because first of all, by now, there's a self-selection process involved in who chooses to come here. So it's serious students who want to do serious learning, but students who are also intellectually and academically curious, and who also play basketball. And you want to be serious Jews, and you want to be B'nai Torah, and you also want to be, quote, successes in life. And how do you become a success? You've taken a lot of the first steps toward being a success, but I want to speculate with you on what it really means to be a success. First of all, the poet William Butler Yeats, the British poet, said that education is not filling a bucket, but it's lighting a fire. When you want to think about what it means to be an educated person, it's not that you go somewhere, we hand you a computer, and you download a ton of information into your head. Okay, that gives you information. It might even give you knowledge. Nothing about it gives you wisdom. Nothing about it gives you wisdom. You have to be able to seek to understand, to see the glow and the fire and the inspiration. You have to apply values to knowledge in order to have wisdom. And the process of becoming an educated person, which you need to be if you're going to be a success, is to figure out, how am I going to realize that I don't want to just have lots of information, but I want to be able to apply my values to that information in such a way that I can live my life with wisdom. Which is why a choice of your continuing education is really critically important. It seems to me that, and again, lefi anias daiti, I'm a learning Jew. Right? But when I look at the next several weeks and the last several weeks of the Torah readings, I think there's really the story, not just of our people, but of what it takes to be a success, what you need to be a success. I guess I'd start by saying that last week, in last week's parsha, the three different weeks parsha, when we're exposed to all the different makot. So I came upon a Chidushei Harim, which I really love. I love Chidushei Harim, the Gera Rebbe. You should look at it, because it's always interesting takes, almost philosophic takes, on the parsha. But he asks the question, what is the makkah in Makkas Choshech? Okay, I mean, we know it's really dark. It's Choshech Afela. Some say it means don't even move. Chidushei Harim says, what's the makkah? So you don't move. So you don't see. What's the makkah? So Chidushei Harim says, the makkah in Choshech is that you don't see your neighbor. The plague is that you don't see the person next to you. That you don't see who he is, what he needs. You don't get to care because you don't see. It says the Summa Chashiv Kames. It's a sum of some of the Bali Musar. So what does that mean? Does it really mean that it's literally a Summa Chashiv Kames? And some says, no, it's not that. It's figurative. It's someone who can't see. Someone who casts a blind eye on the person next to him is like a mace. Is like a mace. The makkah of Mitzrayim, being an eved, is you are only concerned about, the fear was, you're only concerned about your existence moment to moment. There was no space to see. So just like education is lighting a candle, right? Freedom and responsibility as a Jew is to escape darkness. It's to escape darkness. First words that God ever speaks in the Torah. Before there's a world, before there's a human, before there's a Jew. First words God ever says is what? Yehi Or. Let there be light. Let there be light. The mandate for mission control. Right? The first words, right, are create light. From, not darkness. Order from chaos. The mandate to enlighten. First words from the Ribbono Shel Olam to a world not yet created. It's really important. But then you look at our evolution. You know, there's a famous statement that says it's one thing to take the Jew out of Egypt. It's a harder thing to take Egypt out of the Jew. Right? So the process, you wonder how we became a success. Look at the next week's parshiot. The next week's parshiot. The process of going me'avdus l'cheiros. And what that means, the process of empowerment of us as a people and as individuals is really powerful in terms of how you have to live your life. It starts, right, with the first mitzvah given to us as a people. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, right, clearly means that as a slave, you had no control of time. Time controlled you. You're a Ben Chorin. You have both the freedom and the responsibility to own time. You get to make time count. I always talk about the fact that, you know, a lot of people think how hard they have to work to earn a living. And I think how hard should you be working to live a life? What are you really doing? And to me, you know, we also talk a lot about spending money. But there's also another expression called spending time. And which is more precious, spending money or spending time? So I always talk about the fact that spending money is like having a credit card. Right? You make some money, you put it on the credit card, you go out, you spend money on the credit card, the amount goes down, you make some more money, you put it on the card, and that's how you do it. Money is a credit card. Time is a debit card. Time is a debit card. You're born, you're given this debit card. It has your time on it. You don't even know what it is. And there's not a darn thing you can do to put more time on that credit card. And every day you spend it. To learn how to count time, to make time count. More precious than the money. So part of this lesson, the first thing we're taught when we're free is be mekadesh zman. Own it, be in partnership with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And more than that, you get to be responsible for Kedusha. How? So God made Shabbos Kodesh, right? Every 7 days of Shabbos, it's Kodesh. Right? Who makes Yontif Kodesh? We do. Because we decide when Rosh Chodesh is. 15 days after when we make Rosh Chodesh is Yontif, and all of a sudden that day becomes Kodesh. The great lesson By being free and by being Jews, you get to be Mekadesh Bechol. Whether you're taking a drink of water, or three drinks of water, and making a bracha on it. Whether you have Shabbos, whether you're learning Torah and making Birkas HaTorah. Whether you're acting in business with Yashrus and being Mekadesh Hashem. Whether you're involved in Chinuch, whether you're raising your child. V'shinantam levanecha. How you do that. How you create a perfect poppy seed. Or advance science. Or write an essay that gives meaning to someone else. That's your being Mekadesh Nizman. And I think that's the first lesson. And the lessons continue. I'll give you just two more and then I'll close. You've all seen the great movie from which we come, The Ten Commandments? How many see them? Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments? You might have read the screenplay, I hope. Alright, so Ten Commandments. Children of Israel. 6,000 people plus extras, by the way. Plus, you know, they photograph it 100 times, so it's 600,000 people. Right? Leave Mitzrayim. Charlton Heston is at the head of the group leading them out of Egypt. They come to the shores of Yam Suf. Right? Through the sound effects, you hear the hoofs of the horses of Pharaoh's chariots coming. Bnei Israel see all this and they say, why have you taken us out of Egypt? From the flesh pots. I don't know what a flesh pot is. From the flesh pots of Egypt you took us, only to die here at the sea. And Charlton Heston looks at the Jewish people and says, fear not. Stand back and see the glory of God. In the screenplay it says, Hashem Yilachem Lachem. Right? And he turns to Rabbi Shalom. And in one of the great double takes of history, God says, Matitzak Eli. Loosely translated. What do you want from me? What do you want from me? Here's a people. They were slaves. Everything happened to them. They're at the sea. Moshe says, look what's going to happen. God says, Matitzak Eli. At that moment, the Midrash tells us, Nachshon Ben Aminadav looks at the sea and says, aha, maybe being free means we're supposed to take responsibility. And does what? Jumps into the sea. He takes the, here's a great English expression, he takes the leap of faith. An expression, leap of faith, from here. He takes a leap of faith, jumps into the sea, and Rabbanu Shalom says, okay, you do your part, I'll do my part, splits the sea, Bnei Israel go through on dry land, and move forward learning their lessons, and then come to Har Sinai. And God says, you want to do this? Here's the guidebook. Here's the guidebook. Know this guidebook, and you will know how to live a life as a human, as a Ben Torah, as a Jew, in such a way that you'll be a lesson to the world to be able to advance humanity. To advance humanity. And the next 40 years they're in training. Next 40 years they're in training where they are weaned away from being dependent on God doing everything to them and for them, to being partners in their life, to taking ownership, until the point when they cross the Yarden, go into Eretz Yisrael, and get to live the life they're supposed to live. As farmers, creating life from the soil together with God, learning that they have to leave some of what they do for the poor, and for the Levim, and for the Rabbanu Shel Olam, being Ola Regel, having lives of meaning, and building a society of justice. That's a model for the world. That's the whole story. It's a story individually, and it's a story collectively. It's what we strive to be with our world and with our lives. That's what it means to be a success. How are you going to be a success? What are your next steps, fellas, honestly, straightforward? What are your next steps in being a success? I'll tell you in your next steps, there are four things you need. Number one, you need a serious commitment to continue to learn Torah and to grow in Torah. Serious commitment, not derech agav, not a chavrusa when I can do it. A serious commitment to keep learning Torah. A selach harav has to have that kind of a relationship, and you have to keep growing in Torah. You have to keep growing in Torah. By the way, always you have to keep. Please, God, I'm going to keep growing in Torah. But I have a couple of hands tied behind my back. All right? You don't have to. But number one, you need the uncompromising commitment to Torah, to learning Torah, to living Torah, to loving Torah. Number two, I will say to you, you need, particularly you, this group, You need to be in an environment of rigorous academic life. You need to be somewhere where you can learn about the world. By the way, learn about the world in an environment where it's not separate from the world of Torah, but learn about the world in such a way that you equip yourself with the knowledge, with the text and the context, so that you can grow in terms of not just how you're making a living, but how you understand the ideas of the world that you are confronted with and sometimes assaulted with every minute. So number one, Torah. Number two, you need an academic environment. Number three, the next years of critical years. These are the first years that you're independent. These are the first years you're doing your own laundry. I don't know if you do your own laundry here. Do you do your own laundry here? See, you don't even yet do your own laundry. Next year, you're going to be doing your own laundry. I'm saying you're independent. You're a unit. Where are you going to be? What's your network? What's your network? You need to be in an environment with, surrounded by the people who will be defining your lives for the rest of your life. People of similar quality. People who see the world through your lens, but are also part of a broader world. But you need that. And number four, you need to think of preparing for success. Whatever that means, whatever field that means, whatever work you do, you just need to do that. I'm confident you'll all find that. Needless to say, you know, I believe that's the formula for what you'll find at Yeshiva University and Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elkanan. I think you need that kind of environment where you can find your place in the world of Torah with whichever path within YU works for you. I think I've spent a ton of money, millions and millions of dollars a year, to provide a faculty that's not a part-time faculty, but a full-time faculty. Every faculty member, some of whom aren't Jewish, some of whom aren't Jewish, all of them, before they come to YU, have a conversation with the provost, with me, with various other people, to tell them about the culture and the purpose of Yeshiva University, and say, you don't have to subscribe to it, but if you don't respect it, and be mindful, please don't come here. And I think we'll find great excitement. But I also want people who are rigorous scholars, who do research, who are great teachers, and who love to share that with students, who also understand that we can't kill you. You know, Maryland, you'll take 15 hours a week. You know, Queens, 15 hours a year. You know, Yeshiva, 15 hours a day. But we don't want to kill you in it. So it's quality, it's not a killer. Six children, all of them been at Yeshiva, most of them don't even have scars. And love it, because there's space. But the academics are supposed to be good for you. Number three, you know what, when you're ready for law school, and you get accepted to Harvard Law School, and to Cardozo Law School of Yeshiva University, the president of Yeshiva University will tell you to go to Harvard Law School. Okay? Not that I don't think that Cardozo is a really wonderful school with faculty as good, but the network, we just had two women from Stern, two seniors, accepted early decision Harvard Law. Most universities don't even get one. Okay? We haven't heard from the guys yet. They're a little later. They're also a little dumber. But right? But why would you go to Harvard Law? Because the network that you're going to get at Harvard Law, the other students who are in law school with you, and the other alumni of Harvard Law School, will set you on your path to success professionally, and you can't beat it and you can't top it. Harvard College is no big shakes. And what's the network of Harvard College? On an undergraduate level, the network you have at YU is the formative network, not for your living, for your life. Wherever you go, whatever community you go in, it'll be peopled by people who'll be your best friends. As you're going through this journey, which is really complicated, by the way, college is much more complicated. It's a much broader population. You've got to be with like KBY guys. It's a whole different kind of population. Right? But you need your best friends. By the way, I'll also take a great risk and say, and you also need, however you choose to do it, right, the other 51% of the world, the women, in the YU world, when there are lots of opportunities. Many of our extracurricular activities for those who choose it are appropriate and co-ed. We also have, I think we're the only university in the world that has a Shavchana service called YU Connects, run by Rebetzin Sabalovsky. Right, we're doing an enormous amount. Our Russia Yeshiva, right, gives sichot, Right? And do it for men and women together so that afterwards there's a social hour so in the right venue, in the right way, people can meet each other. Right? But that network is more valuable than the Harvard Law Network because it's your network for life. And by the way, you're also in an environment, in a small liberal arts environment, you want to edit the newspaper? You can edit the newspaper. You want to write for Torah journals? You'll get to write for Torah journals. You want to be the center of our NCAA basketball team? If you're 5'4 or higher, you'll get to do it. There's great diversity within our homogeneity. But it's going to sustain you wherever you go. And finally, you want success. I think you'll have enough role models to help you define what success is. But in fact, we do. We have wonderful success, Ivy League level, at admissions of you if you work hard into the graduate or professional schools of your choice, or business opportunities. By the time you graduate, there'll be jobs again. Right? And our center for our career development center, and our mashgichim, and our counseling centers, and our faculty who do research for you, and our alumni form an incredible network that will work for you to see what's next after that. The last thing I want to say to you before I close is you can't afford not to go to yeshiva. I know it's hard times. I know you're protective of your parents. I know some people have been really suffering in this economy, and even those of us who haven't been suffering in this economy have been concerned in this economy. So it's not only a great recession, but it's a little bit about a recession of the spirit, where, you know, President Obama began with saying, yes, we can, and too many of us think, well, maybe we can't. And therefore, people are exhausted. I mean, you know, your parents have been paying tuition, right, since the year Gimel. Probably spent so far about $250,000 on each of you. Many of your parents, thank God, have multiple children. A lot of expense. There's a real desire to get to this point and say, oh, it's enough. It's enough. They know enough. And they'll go someplace, might be a non-event, but it's cheap. But you get what you pay for. And here are the most important years of your life since infancy. You've had unbelievable rabbeim who have fortified you and charged you up. And you got to keep growing. And you have to look at the expense and say, I'm going to spread it over. You know, you buy a car, you're done with the expense in 6 years. You're also done with the car in 6 years. What you do now, the expense that you spent on Torah Shraga, the expense of YU, pays off dividends over a lifetime. And here's the other thing. You can't afford it. Nobody's going to break. No one's going to break going to yeshiva. We give out $35 million a year in undergraduate scholarship. Over 51% of the cost of tuition is returned as scholarship. Tuition is $32,000. Room and board is, I think, $9,000, but you have to sleep somewhere and you have to eat somewhere wherever you are. 30% of our students have the capacity to pay full tuition. 70% do not. The average student doesn't pay 32, the average student pays 16. If your family is really in desperate straits, we're there. We're there. But even if they're not, give us the opportunity to meet with your parents or you and talk about how you can work it out that you make this investment that you be there. Because you should be there. You wouldn't be a Torah Shraga. I'm not the admissions office, by the way, so if we rejected you, I don't mean you. And it doesn't mean you're bad. It just means you're a better fit somewhere else. You should be with us. I need to work for you next year. That's the pitch. The end story, and then if you have questions, I would love them, and I'll even make a bracha and drink all three of the glasses of water. True story, in my last life, I was the head of Hillel, and we had the zechus of partnering with a really wonderful philanthropist named Michael Steinhardt, who had a crazy idea. He thought that every Jew of college age should be entitled to a free 10-day trip to Israel. It's called birthright. And he thought it was important because he thought that every Jew would feel a connection midor l'dor, from one generation to another, and that the only real way, if you don't have a sense of Jewish identity, to have that Jewish identity isn't an Israel trip, but is a Jewish journey to the Jewish homeland. And partnered with Hillel to start Birthright. So I had the zechus in the last 2.5 years of my tenure to personally take 16,000 students here to Arzenu HaKadosha. Most of them were not young people who said, oh, I'm dying to go to Israel. Most of them were wonderful Jewish students who said, it's free?
right, and came,
and then met their forebears and met their destiny. Now, what they do with it afterwards, by the way, the follow-up is critical. But I'll tell you, they just released a study that said a radical, radical lower percentage of Jews who've been on birthright would ever consider intermarrying than kids who didn't go on birthright. And that just at that threshold level, if we ever figure out how to be smart enough to follow up one-on-one, can be a revolution. In any event, on the first trip, I took 10 buses the first night down to the Kotel at about midnight. And we brought them to the back of Kotel Square and we talked to them. And one of the things you have to tell them is you have to make it safe for them if, I mean, these are kids without much of a Jewish identity. If when they walk down there, they see a wall. It's a wall. So we said to them, look, you're going to be here 10 days. Something is going to connect you to your people. Don't feel bad if when you go down there, it's a wall. And then we told them a little bit about what we thought the Kotel represented. And I said, you have 20 minutes down there, then please get back on the buses. So they have 20 minutes down there. They get back. I'm on my bus. I'm outside my bus, and the students are getting in. As they're doing it, one of the students, a woman, comes up to me, and she has tears coming down her face. True story. And she asks me if when the bus is loaded, she could talk to the other students. I said, sure. And so everybody got on the bus. I got on. I got attention of the bus. I said, one of you would like to talk to the group, and I handed her the ROM call. And this is what she said. She said, you know, when I walked down through the plaza to the wall, and I touched the stones of the wall, I was really surprised to see how smooth they were. And then I realized that they'd been caressed by generations and generations of our parents. And I realized that they'd been smoothed by the tears of our people through hundreds and hundreds of years. Then I looked higher up on the wall, and I saw when you look higher, the stones are coarser and are more jagged. So I think we all have to reach up higher. We all have to reach up higher. Thank you very much. Now, I hope, just one second, excuse me. One. I made it safe for you. Any questions about my children, my grandchildren, why you, other colleges you're going to, Chidushei Harim, all you have to do is tell me your name. I don't know, Karen Biafra, they ask questions. Shalavim, they ask questions. Reishit, they go ahead.
I'm
Yitzhak
now.
From where, Yitz?
From Queens.
From Queens, very nice.
How
does one determine if you mean the BMP or the YP program? It's even more complicated because there's still works in progress and we're developing them still further. First of all, I think when if you haven't yet, at some point you'll have a bechina from our bochein to help guide you in placing you. But you can also talk to your rabbeim or our people in the office. From my perspective, okay, the yeshiva program is a classical yeshiva. It's you know, Volozhin on the Hudson. And you've experienced your rhythms here, and if you are into and own the notion of spending a few hours, you know, in the morning b'chevrusa, you know, preparing material and then having a shiur from the Rebbe, from basically 9 to 2 or 2:30 with a break for lunch in between, right? And if that fills you up, then that, I mean, it's been time tested. That's the yeshiva program, and then the question is which shiur you should be in. And you can talk to Rabbi Schwartz about it, or to your Rabbeim about it, or try one and then you'll go to another. I'm not sure, there are two dais. One says you find a Rebbe, and you stay with him throughout your career. The other is, you know, get different styles and try different ones. We also have a shiur this year for students who really want to do that, but whose skills, even after being in Israel, aren't sufficient. So there's a shiur in YP, right, that concentrates on skill development. Right? Rabbi Daniel Stein teaches that this year. That's important shiur. The BMP program, which is called the Stone Base Medrash program, I think is what people call it different things. Some say it's the program for Frum Balabatim. Okay, although there are a lot of people who go from there into the smicha program. Others call it a boutique approach. The difference is it's 9 to 1. It's one Rebbe. It's Gemara learning and it's Chavrusa learning, but in addition, but it's a shorter period of time for that. And in addition, there's Nach and Machshava and Halacha. So it's a different kind of program. I would tell you a high quality program. And a little bit you have to think of, and you should talk to your Rebbeim here, think of which one is a match. I also want to warn you, the Hak, right? The Hak is that there are different levels, and this is the good, and this is less good. I really reject it, and I'm the president not only of Yeshiva University, but I'm the president of Yeshivas Rebbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. And if you'd speak to Rav Yonah Reis, who I'm sure will speak to you at some point, who's the menahel of the yeshiva, he'll tell you the same thing. You have to find the path that's right for you, that fills you up with Torah in the right way. Would I tell you that if you want, that you're worried about time and you want to go 9 to 1 instead of 9 to 3, go to 1 instead of the other? I think it's a wrong reason. I think you have to look at the tochen of what the Seder Hayom is and what you can learn. And if you're learning with, whether it's with Rev Daniel Feldman or whether it's with Rev Schwartz or whether it's with any of the Rebbeim who are in the Beis Medrash program, it's really high quality Torah. So that's the, and you'll get to choose. By the way, if you go into one program and you say that's not the program you want and there's another semester, you'll be working with the Mashgiach, with the Pskane Mashgiach. You'll find your place. There's enough variety, right, that you can find it. And you'll be Matzliach. I have no doubt about that. Other questions? Yes, sir. You are who? From where?
San Diego.
Very nice. La Jolla or?
San Diego.
Ah. So close to La Jolla. I like saying La Jolla because it's spelled La Jolla. Right?
Yeah.
See that? It's it's a fascinating question. If you're going to college in Israel because you've decided to make Aliyah, and you know that you're pursuing one of the directions that Israeli higher education has, like, you know, in Israel you want to be a lawyer, so the law faculty starts right as soon as you're out of the army. I have nothing to say about it except to say, who would say anything except mazel and bracha for someone who's decided to make aliyah? The comparison of any of the Israeli universities to YU is like the comparison of Penn or Maryland to YU. They are overwhelmingly secular universities. At Bar-Ilan, there's a kollel that you can participate in, but the majority of students are not dati. And the majority of your experience will not be in any way a reinforcing Torah experience. And you will have to find, just as you have to find, if you go to a secular college in the United States, a way and a manner and a place to keep your network, to keep your social sviva, and to keep your learning. There are a lot of people who go back to YU, finish their bachelor's, sometimes find, you know, from the other 51% of the population, someone who shares your passion, and you get married and you make aliyah together. It's another derech. It's chanach lanar al pi darko. You have to know who the person is, and I would never, ever discourage anyone from making aliyah. I know a lot of people who've returned, finished their degrees at yeshiva, and made aliyah, and have been successful because they're also making aliyah with a chevra of people from YU, you know, with whom they share a lot. So it's a real personal decision. Okay, is that helpful? Yes, sir. You are?
Andrew Israeli.
Andrew Israeli?
Yeah.
Related to Donnie Israeli?
Father.
Related to Eric Israeli?
That's my brother.
All right, I don't want to talk to you. Who's next? Please go.
How successful is YU in getting the graduates into...
Well, it depends on the graduate, doesn't it? I would tell you that we are as competitive as the Ivy League is in it. We're extremely successful. Last year, we had 29 pre-med students accepted at Einstein, which is our medical school, but one of the best in the country. By the way, shame on you, 16 women and 13 men. We have very high rates of acceptance. I have a figure that I was given, but I don't want you to give it too much strength, because if you bore down, you got to figure out what it means. But for the class of 2009, 92.5% of the graduates last June are now either in graduate or professional school or working. It's a way of saying 7.5 people saying, duh. And it's a hard year. I think we have our career development center, which we've only really started to make superb in the last 3 years, is really top-notch. By the way, in an important way, I would venture to say, here's a little secret, most of you don't have a clue as to what you're going to do after college. Don't feel bad. It's really a confusing world. In my generation, you knew you were going to be a mechanic, you were going to be a rabbi, you were going to be a doctor, a lawyer, or maybe business. And you didn't think much about it. I didn't think much about it until I was in law school. I said, what on earth am I doing here? Okay, so your generation is more challenged and more blessed in that way. In fact, you know, what David DeBrooks, who writes in the New York Times, has coined a phrase, is that a lot of American young people finish college, have no idea what to do, and they go on something he calls an odyssey year, saying, let me figure out, what I want to do, where I want to go. I don't even think it's a bad thing. But I think you should use your time in college to explore different arenas, and our Career Development Center really works with you, both in giving you different kind of exams, but in also exposing you to different possibilities. But in turn, I think we're very importantly helpful in helping you with your applications, with thinking about which are the right schools for you and how you go. And I could say absolutely with full conscience that you will be only better off and certainly no worse off in terms of getting into a graduate or professional school if you're at yeshiva as opposed to being in another school. And certainly better off than if you're in a not strong academic environment that, doesn't really invest in you. Like, I mean, I wouldn't name Queens College. Queens College. Any school like that. You also have to know that the student-faculty ratio at Yeshiva College is 8-1. You still outnumber them, but it's not by much in terms of the faculty. That's really important. The average class size is 12.5. We worry about that 0.5, but that creates a different kind of environment for you that you should take advantage of. By the way, with all my shenanigans, you guys got to decide the school that's right for you. And you'll make it work wherever you go. I want to say that again. There's no question that I'm really invested in convincing you and encouraging you that you can afford and you should be at YU. But God forbid, and be mochel me, if you walk away in any way feeling judged or not proper for taking the course that you decide with your parents is the right path for you. Okay? Cool about that? That comes from someone who went to NYU. Yes, sir. Well, they're not exactly spending more money for extra years in Columbia, because if they're in Columbia, they'd have to have 4 years before they get a BA. So it might be one extra year, but if they were in Columbia, they also wouldn't be getting nearly the scholarship that they'll be getting at YU. So I think it's fungible from a money point of view. I think if you know you want to be an architect and you're accepted at Pratt, right? If you're accepted at Pratt, I think I can't say to you, you're going to have the same academic experience and you'll be fine at yeshiva. I don't give you architectural training. I have a friend who's in his first year at Pratt. He's killing himself because it's a very hard program, but he loves it because he's really growing in architecture. Now, I've been having discussions with City University, with City College, which has an architecture school. And see, in architecture school, they're also moving. It used to be a bachelor's in architecture was what you needed. It's moving more now toward being a master's program. As it becomes a master's program, then it's easier for us because we say, get a liberal arts education, then you'll go for a master's in architecture. But right now, it's really hard. And the other problem, though, is if you're at Pratt, it's also really hard to have a sviva to keep learning and doing things. It's a real dilemma. Engineering, I'm less concerned. My daughter Kira is majoring in physics and math and tells me she wants to be an engineer. I think she's in exactly the right place at Stern to be able to explore with physicists and mathematicians, and she'll do the right path, whether it's Columbia's 3-2 program or whether it's City College's 3-2 program. She'll be fine, and she's thrilled that she's where she is. So if you're looking for engineering, I think you absolutely should fortify yourself, not with a tunnel vision of engineering, but do a 3-2 or 3-1 program. That would be my view. More and more people are going into engineering. We're looking more and more as to how to have a more serious pre-engineering kind of preparation. Thank you for the question. Any other questions? Nobody wants to know about my kids? Do you know my children? Who knows Kira? Anybody knows Kira? Noam? Nachum? Nachum Jolt? NCSY Kolel? Do you forgive him yet? Ariella? Yes? She was your first grade? No. You know Ariella? And, what? You know Ariella? She certainly was. Avery? Avery Ramaz? Oh, only the old guys? Only the guys who've been defeated on the basketball court by Avery? That's not what he says. And Penny? Anyone knows Penny? Anyone to what? Yes, you know Penny. All right, good. Those are the best things. Gentlemen, you're the future of our people, and you all have bright individual and collective futures. You're in a great place. You're in a great place. I hope you go mechayel el chayel. I hope to work for you next year, but whichever way, hatzlacha, and we will all be blessed by the lives that you build. Thank you very much.